Hello and welcome to Life Sciences in Queensland. Our podcast guest today has spent a lifetime ensuring that leading-edge agricultural biotechnology and microbiology are being applied to some of the world's most intractable food challenges. That precise, detailed work, along with fostering the careers of hundreds of researchers and postgraduate students, has seen James Dale rise to the position of inaugural Distinguished Professor at QUT's Centre for Tropical Crops and Biocommodities. An expert himself in researching, describing, and overcoming destructive agricultural diseases, Professor Dale received his Officer of the Order of Australia in 2004, and his work was listed among Time magazine's top 25 inventions that same year. In 2015, he was honoured with a Queensland Greats Award and was named Queensland's Senior Australian of the Year in 2019. The most recent honour for this scientist, researcher, entrepreneur and humanitarian was for his dedication to developing a potentially life-saving food source for some of the poorest people on Earth. James, welcome.
Thank you.
You've forged a stellar career as an agricultural biotechnologist working on disease resistance. Were you always interested in science?
Not particularly. When I was at school, you know, science was just one of those subjects you did. It didn't excite me particularly. I certainly enjoyed biology, but, you know, nothing special. I went to university and I did agricultural science at the University of Sydney. In those days, everybody, it didn't matter what sort of type of science you were doing, did chemistry, physics, maths and biology. And it was pretty much an extension of what I was doing at school. So, yeah, I was able to get through. But then we started second year, and second year was when we got into very particular subjects. And I thought, wow, some of this is really interesting stuff. Yeah, maybe I'd like to just read about it anyway rather than just studying it. And so as I went along through my undergraduate degree, I became increasingly interested and excited by science, and particularly agricultural science. And then I went on and did honours, and at the end of that year, I was really very keen on agricultural science, and particularly about diseases of plants. And so I was able to get a scholarship to do a PhD, which was fabulous. Mm. And that was really where it all started.
And when did it become even more interesting for you? How far down the track?
I really enjoyed doing my PhD, and I had an absolutely fabulous supervisor who really instilled the sort of love of research. And that was great. And then I was incredibly lucky to go to Europe. And that was in the mid to late 70s when recombinant DNA technology was really at its infancy. It was really just starting to get going. And Europe was a pretty exciting place to be. So I was very lucky to be able to experience that.
In recent years, Australian growers have held their breath after the discovery of Panama disease among commercial banana crops in Queensland and also in the Northern Territory. And it's quite a devastating disease, as we know. It poses a global threat. But you and your team have done something very special to defeat this banana blight. Can you explain the breakthrough for us?
It's one type of Panama disease called Tropical Race 4. Race 1 has been around for yonks and is probably present in every banana-producing country. Tropical Race 4 probably came out of Indonesia, probably been around for yonks, but it didn't really spread very far until the sort of early 90s. We started working on Tropical Race 4, what's known as TR4, in about the year 2000. So it was before it became, as I often say to my colleagues, before it was a superstar disease. We knew that there were bananas around, primarily wild bananas, that were completely resistant to this disease. And that we thought, wow. You know, in those days, it was the early times of being able to pull genes out of plants, etc. So we were very lucky to be able to get access to six little seedlings, banana seedlings, that had been brought down to Queensland. They came as seeds, had been brought down, and they were from a wild banana growing in Southeast Asia, which was growing in a field where all of the Cavendish bananas had been devastated, and here was this one banana that was growing, but it was a wild banana. It was seeded. Half of those seeds or half those seedlings appeared to be resistant and half susceptible. So here was a fabulous opportunity to say, we should be able to go and find what the gene is that's generating this resistance. We went into a program of gene mining.
Mm-hmm.
That could be fine. And we found a gene that we called RGA2 in this wild banana. And then what we did was we transferred it by genetic modification into Cavendish. So that was fabulous. We were able to do that. But we had no proof that it was going to provide any resistance. We were then very lucky that banana grower from the Northern Territory, and the disease was already present in the Northern Territory and causing major problems.
Yes.
And this farmer came down to see us. He'd been advised that we might be doing something interesting. And he came down and said, look, if you want to test your bananas, you can test them on my plantation. So we did. We took 7 lines. That's all we had. We only had 7 lines that had this gene, and we took them up to his plantation and planted them. And within a year, the controls that didn't have the gene, the normal Cavendish, started to die. And then 2 of these lines didn't seem to be getting any disease. That was after the first year. And then after the second year, they still didn't have any disease.
So 2 of the 7?
2 of the 7 lines.
Mm.
Another 2 also had very few plants infected. After 3 years, and then we had to pull the trial out, that was 2015, we had to pull the trial out for other reasons. 1 line had no infected plants, and the other one had a tiny percentage. We thought, wow. One of the interesting things was that as the trial went along, you know, every time we went there or got a report, and we thought, please, no more infected plants. You know,
and you're holding your breath.
We were holding our breath.
As you walked onto the field, yeah.
And we got to the end of that 3 years, and these plants were genuinely resistant. And now we've gone into a much larger field trial on the same plantation, and got the same result, which is fabulous.
Where are you up to with that research today?
So with that one, we're now taking this one line that we've got that is virtually immune to the disease, and very importantly, has all the right characteristics from an agronomic perspective. So it yields very well. You know, it looks exactly like all of the other bananas, because the only difference is it's got another banana gene in it. It yields very well. It looks like bananas. We haven't tasted it yet, but almost certainly they'll taste exactly the same. So now what we're doing is we're taking those through to prepare them for what's known as deregulation. So these are genetically modified. So they have to go through a regulator, and we have to demonstrate to that regulator, which is in Australia known as the Office of the Gene Technology Regulator, we have to demonstrate that they're completely safe, that they're safe for human consumption, they're safe for the environment, they're safe to become a commercial crop. So that's where we are at the moment.
And then moving forward, how soon or how confident do you feel that these crops could be used extensively?
We're looking probably at the end of next year for them to finally get through that deregulation process, and then they will be available for commercial planting. The big challenge we have here is that they're genetically modified. And out in the community, there's this perception that, you know, there's something really pretty dodgy about this genetic modification stuff. When you think about it, what we've done is we moved a banana gene from one banana
to another banana.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the difference. And it's a resistance gene. And the amazing thing is that resistance gene actually occurs in Cavendish bananas. It just doesn't work.
Mm.
So there really is no difference. So we do have that limitation that they are genetically modified.
Although, when you look at the devastation this disease causes around the world, this is quite a significant breakthrough, isn't it?
Absolutely. Very importantly, there are countries that are really struggling with this disease from a heavily economic perspective. And so, if this is the only answer, and it's one of the really serious answers at the moment, I think you'll see quite a large take-up.
James, over your career, you have won many high-level research grants and worked with impressive organisations and foundations. How did your team become involved in the grand challenges in global health that was funded by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
The way we became involved was actually through another foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, in Africa, particularly in East Africa and West Africa. Bananas aren't just a dessert crop. They're a staple food, and particularly in places like Uganda, where bananas are the staple food. And these are cooking bananas. You know, they're not the fresh fruit that we eat. They're cooked, and they're used as their primary starch source. We'd been invited, or I'd been invited over to Uganda a couple of years, or it would have been about year 2001, 2002, because Uganda and surrounding countries were really struggling and they were looking to biotechnology as a way to improve their bananas. 2 years later, the Gates Foundation put out a call for expressions of interest in grand challenges in global health. And there were 14 grand challenges. And one of those was to develop staple crops with elevated levels of micronutrients. Because micronutrient deficiencies are one of the major public health problems in the world. HIV/AIDS and malaria are the two really big ones, of course. And micronutrient deficiencies is right underneath that. Previously, and continues today, one of the major ways of overcoming micronutrient deficiencies is through supplements or through food fortification. Both of those have problems. One is that they require a constant input from primarily donor organisations, and we all hear about donor fatigue. And the other one is that often it doesn't get to the poorest of the poor. So the concept was, why don't we create the food that they eat? Why don't we create them with high levels of micronutrients? So that was what the grand challenge was. And so we, with our Ugandan colleagues, put in an expression of interest. And then we were notified we'd been shortlisted. Could have fallen off a chair. However, the shortlist was something like 450.
Okay, so you weren't quite there yet.
Not quite.
Yeah.
So we had to then put in, from a four-page expression of interest, in a huge document to go into that final round. And then in early 2005, we were notified that we were successful. So there were 44 projects funded across that 14 grand challenges. So very exciting stuff.
Is this how you became known as the Golden Banana Man?
Yeah, that's right. So what we've done, and now we're well along the way in that project, is we've elevated the level of provitamin A in these bananas. So provitamin A is alpha and beta carotene, and they're yellow or golden colour. So the flesh of these bananas that we've now produced is really a beautiful golden colour. So when you take off the golden peel, you have a golden banana underneath.
It sounds fascinating, doesn't it? When you when you tell that story and the journey that you've undertaken, it must be, and I guess this happens a lot with grants and research, is that you're never quite sure where it's all going to end up. I mean, I guess you hope it ends up in receiving a grant or a discovery that you're after, but is that a frustration you have to live with all the time?
It is a frustration. Often there just is insufficient funding to be able to fund all the wonderful ideas. We've been amazingly lucky. We've had four phases of funding from the Gates Foundation. And so they're still funding us at the moment. And we're in that last final phase to finally get the bananas out to farmers, hopefully next year again.
Good.
Which is amazing.
As QUT's banana research program leader, what other banana projects have you been involved with?
We've had a big project on another disease of bananas called bunchy top. It's a virus disease. And from an Australian perspective, it's actually quite historical. So back in the year, about 100 years ago, the virus arrived in Australia, probably from Fiji in Suckers. In those days, the banana industry in Australia was basically in southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales. And in a very short period of time, the number of plantations had gone from more than 500 down to about four. And then one guy figured out how this virus was moving about. And there were fabulous legislation came in and they controlled the disease. And it's still controlled the same way today. So it's still about in Australia. It's causing very little problem. Cost money, but very little problem in Australia. Causing massive problems in, particularly in Africa. So we had a Gates Foundation project funded in Malawi in Africa to overcome the disease there. We got through field trials, so things were going well, but unfortunately we weren't able to continue that funding. Mm. One of those frustrations.
You've also done important work on extracting bioethanol from sugarcane. That's been around for a while. Are you still working on that at this point?
No, we're not. Okay. No, that project came to an end. It was very much about producing sugarcane that produced its own cellulases to break down the cell walls to create sugars that could be converted into bioethanol. So, great idea. Nearly worked. But it's sort of been overcome, particularly the whole bioethanol discussion has sort of been overcome by electric vehicles coming in.
Mm.
So the whole concept of a renewable biofuel is now being subsumed by moving completely to electric cars.
Although I can recall, and it wasn't that many years ago, that it was and remained on the front page of a newspaper for some time.
Oh, yes.
Because very promising.
It was and is, but I think the electric vehicle movement is going to overrun it.
James, your work and that of your team has certainly gained worldwide attention, and significant projects have flowed from your achievements over more than 30 years. What are the countries that have benefited from the agricultural biotechnology work being done by your team at QUT?
We've been involved in a number of countries. Obviously Australia.
Mm.
And I think Australia will ultimately benefit a lot from our research as it goes on. These projects take a long time. You know, the Gates Foundation project started 2005 and we're going to release the bananas in 2021. It's not something you do overnight. So it takes a long time to have that impact. The Australian bananas, I think, for the industry in Australia will come out also 2021, 2022, 2023. And I think we'll see then a continuum, really a pipeline. And that's fabulous to be able to put something back into your own country. Internationally, Uganda is probably the major impact from a product perspective. But we also had a lot of influence in Vietnam. We worked in Vietnam for about 10 years, and those collaborations, even though they're not formal, they continue on at an informal level.
Mm.
So I would say Africa, and particularly around East Africa and Vietnam, that's outside Australia.
What would you say is the biggest challenge facing you and your team at the moment?
Practically, our biggest challenge is that we're now bringing in a new technology known as gene editing. So gene editing has the advantage in that most forms, or many forms, are not considered genetic modification. You can get the same outcome either by conventional breeding or by just natural mutation. So in Australia, the Americas, many countries in the Americas, have already come out and said these forms of gene editing will not be considered GM and will not be regulated and will not require labelling. So we're in the process of transitioning our genetic modification programs over to gene editing programs, and that's really so that the consumers can be much more comfortable with the products that we'll be turning out. And I think that the potential for gene editing in crops is just fabulous, and bananas are going to be one of those crops that will benefit more than most.
Well, James, 2021, 2022, 2023 and beyond are exciting years for you, aren't they?
They certainly are. It just gets better and better.
Well, thank you so much, James Dale, for spending time today explaining your work that is essential in continuing to feed the world. And you certainly are one of Queensland's life sciences greats. Thank you so much.
Thank you.